This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
Welcome to Dreamland. This week, we are going in three directions at once. Back in time to an extraordinary UFO event, very controversial, as most of the big ones are. Forward in time to our own future and to another world. We're going to experience something about the Pleiadian connection. A lot of new material has surfaced. This happened many years ago, Billy Meyer, and we're going to learn all about it. And we're going to learn from one of the masters of the whole field, Britt Elders. Britt is with us. She has just completed a new version of UFO Contact from the Pleiades. You will remember the book very well. It is the book full of extraordinary photos taken by Billy Meyer, and it remains one of the most controversial of all of these stories. Britt has studied it and been involved from the beginning with Billy, and probably knows more about this than anyone else in the world. We're going to talk about Billy, his photos, his experience, the world of the Pleiadians as Britt has come to understand it, and I'll tell you a story of my own about them, because I had contact with one of them, with no question about what he was. That's what he was. At least he could speak telepathically, and he was said that's where he was from. And I had no reason to disbelieve him, and he could have walked down the street and not been noticed as anything unusual. Welcome, Britt. I'm so excited. We're going to have a great time.
I am too, Whitley. This is wonderful. We've crossed paths in the past, but it's nice to finally meet.
Well, you're very close to Shirley MacLaine, as I know. Yes. And Shirley and Anne and I were friends for a long time. Annie and Shirley were, I remember spending long evenings with the two of them at Jeffrey's restaurant on the Pacific Coast Highway, way out overlooking the Pacific as the sunset, and talking about, listening to them basically talk about the world and all of its meaning and the dark and the light, and what wonderful conversations I was privy to.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine.
But I was definitely the second fiddle, the observer.
Two wonderfully intelligent women. Had to be fabulous.
Certainly were, and I lost my Annie too early.
Yes.
But Shirley's still going. She's still, what's she doing lately?
She's 90 years old. She's doing very well. She's got a book coming out in October. She just finished a movie, and she has two more movies to do this year. So she is very active, on top of things, very interested in life, keeping herself together, curious as ever, always asking questions, which I adore about her. She's so
That's
great
wonderful.
In that respect. Yeah, she's doing so well.
Well, we drifted apart after Annie passed away, and I wonder why. I think she and Annie, she was mostly interested in Annie more than me. But and with good reason, because she saw what a brilliant person Annie was and how she had created the whole communion experience. And, you know, she did. I mean, she was really on top of it. Anne was, as soon as Anne understood what had happened, she was going. She took control of it, and it became Anne's project. And now I am going down to Rice University in a few weeks to go to the archive that Annie created of all 4,000 of the letters, the best archive of contact experience in the world, created by that wonderful lady right behind me. You can see her, folks.
Yeah.
And the other painting is by a brilliant young artist called Liberty Noakes, by the way. Mm. People ask me about that from time to time. Anyway, I will be, they have all been digitized and they will soon be available for use as soon as they're, each one has to be individually anonymized. And that takes a long time because they can't be publicly available or even available to academics until we have a completely anonymized digital file.
Right.
But that's on the way. It's happening.
Whitley, that's so impressive because right now the world needs information. And when you have an archive like that and you're willing to open it to the public, we can't keep relying on the government to tell us what is and what isn't. We need to get out there and really do our own research and learn. And I commend you for putting something like that together. That's beautiful.
Well, visitors have said things like, it's up to you. This belongs to you.
Yeah.
They don't care about the government. They're in control of what the government does anyway, which is why 14 administrations have all refused to open the doors. The visitors are waiting for the people, us, to open the door from our side.
Exactly.
Otherwise, the door stays closed. They're not going to be doing this through any governments. It's direct.
No, and that's why putting together something like this, a library of so much information, is so valuable. We need it for everything, because everyone that has had an experience needs to come forward, explain it so that people can understand it, learn from it, and move forward with it.
Yes.
And until we open up, we aren't going to have contact on a mass scale.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's what people learn. That a lot of people are just very passive and they sit waiting for the government. And the government, even if the government tells us something, they're not going to tell us what we need to know, which is how to live in such a way that our lives are meaningful to the visitors and their lives are meaningful to us. Believe me, no one working in the government knows the answer to that question. That answer is going to come out of us, and it's going to come out of those letters, and it's going to come out of our lives. That's where it's coming from. I mean, we are in contact, not the government.
That's right. And governments have a tendency to put forth this, there might be something there, and then take it back 2 weeks later. We don't need that confusion. We need to figure out what's going on in our own hearts relating to what is happening in the world in truth.
Well, yeah, and especially because they've got all these patents, that they've patented all of this stuff illegally, because you can't patent. You have to patent something you develop, not something you found.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you find a remarkable, unusual object of some kind, and you figure a use for it, you can't patent it. The object, you can only patent your design.
Right.
And that's not what happened. They patented these other designs as if they were their own when they were actually found. And the whole defense industry has got those patents. I know one man in the defense industry, a couple, who have the patents personally.
Uh-huh.
And make money from them, and they're totally illegal. I said to one of them, what are you going to do? He said, well, I'll move. I'll leave the country. And I thought to myself, amplify that by thousands and a bunch of big companies, and you very well understand why the defense industry prevailed upon the Congress to emasculate the Schumer Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
And they did that. That came from the defense industry. And they did it because they cannot afford that to come out.
Right.
Because if it does, then they're all in trouble. They owe a lot of money and they don't intend to pay.
Right.
Okay, let's get on to something fun. We've been diving kabeshing and now I want to talk first, before we go on, a little bit about the controversy so that we can really get into the true story.
Sure.
Now, there was a lot of controversy, of course, about Billy Meier and what he said and whether or not the images are real and so forth and so on. Can you give us some idea of what those controversies were and some of the players in that?
Yeah.
I know that one man, I've forgotten his name, found models of the UFOs at Billy Meyer's house.
Well, I would love it if he would bring those forward. Because we had people saying, oh, I saw models there. But nobody brought them forward. During the course of a 7-year investigation into this case, my husband Lee and I spent over 365 days living at the farm. Billy gave us free rein and everything. We walked through every inch of that farm. We went through everything that was present in the residence and on the property. And at no time did we ever see a model or anything that people could even construe as a model. So that was interesting. But this was way back in the 70s, 76, 77. The contacts began in 75. By the time we got in 76, there was already a great accumulation of photographs. One particular individual said, oh, he found a line in the photograph, which must have been the string supporting a model. Others just did not like the fact that it was a contact. It was a willing face-to-face communication. At that point in time, things were going on like Betty and Barney Hill, and your experience, of course, was happening. The Walden case, Bill Walden. No, Travis Walton, not the basketball player. And all of that was happening. And so people were locked into it's a one-time happenstance occurrence. That wasn't true. There were contacts happening, and there have been for a long, long time. So we had all of this type of thing. And then people just got into the aspect that we weren't UFO investigators. Well, they were correct. We had a company called Intercept. Intercept was designed basically to prevent Fortune 500s and financial institutions from being eavesdropped and wiretapped. So yes, we had an investigative background. We didn't want to throw our company into the toilet by associating it with UFOs, which back in the 70s was a taboo subject.
Yeah, your company would have been folded up and put in a drawer or a trash can. Mile 13, here you came.
Yes, definitely. But we did have some business in London, and we decided to go over and check out this case. When we got there, we expected, okay, we can go through this quickly. We'll debunk it. We'll get back home, get back to work. We got there, and Billy opened everything to us. He gave us photographs, movie footage, metal samples from the skin of the craft, audio recordings of the craft. We interviewed a few dozen witnesses. A week later, we came back with a lot of information that really needed to be examined. But people were unhappy with the fact that we weren't involved with UFO culture at that time. And we thought, no, if you're investigating murder one, counter espionage, or a UFO case, you apply the same criteria. And that's how we approached it.
I know what you mean when you get that kind of hostility, because I came, as far as the UFO people were concerned, out of nowhere.
Yeah.
The reason being, I guess the visitors were interested in what I could do for them, I don't know if they know the UFO community even existed. So I had the same problem. I was an outsider. In fact, I'm still an outsider. I haven't been invited once to a MUFON national convention. I am still sona grata with MUFON after all these years, and I always will be. They do not forget. They do not forget.
No. I consider me on the outside too. I mean, I have a lot of friends in the community. We exchange a lot of information, explore different topics. But as far as being invited to a major MUFON conference, that's never happened, and I don't think it ever will.
No, I don't think it does well either. Yeah, I'm the same way. I go to MUFON, local MUFONs all the time and talk to them on Zoom and so forth. But the national group is still very much controlled by nuts and bolts, old-fashioned. I don't want to criticize them anymore. They're there and they've done a lot.
Yes, they have.
They really have. And let's leave it at that and go on to something else. Now, here's the question I have. What interested you in the first place? You guys aren't in the UFO community. Did you see something or what happened?
Well, when we first saw the photographs, we said they're too good to be true. There's just no way that this whole case can be real. And then when we had the opportunity to sit down and look at hundreds and hundreds of photographs with Meyer and all of the other evidence that he presented to us, we just knew somebody had to look into it and look into it from the standpoint of taking it to qualified individuals with qualified equipment that had a reputation for excellence and could actually examine these things. We knew we didn't have that capability. So through Intercept and other connections, we were able to get into various labs and really have it, the information examined thoroughly. And that's what we wanted to do. But I have to say, once you're involved with the subject matter, you are in over your eyes. It's just, it consumes you. You keep going. You want more and more and more. And every time we thought, we've got this answered. We know how it's all set up and everything. And we go to test. No, there were more questions. Hundreds and hundreds of more questions. So you can't just stop with one individual saying, oh, this is really interesting. It digitizes very well when they're looking at a photograph. And you got to go further. Well, what does that digitization mean? What does it mean when you compare it to a tree standing right next to this craft? What does it mean distance-wise? How big is the object? All of that comes into play. And so you keep progressing down the road of investigation until you get some real answers.
So you did the same thing happens to everybody. I don't know a single person in this field who wasn't drawn into it by something like what happened to you.
Yeah.
You went to Billy Meyer expecting that he was a kind of a goof, and it turned out that he was not.
Right.
Do you know, let me ask you, well, you know, it's time for us to take our first break.
Okay.
Now that the free part of Dreamland runs only half an hour, I'm hoping that it'll encourage someone to subscribe again, because I'm probably looking at the last few years of Unknown Country and Dreamland now, because I just don't have subscribers. But anyway, we'll be right back.
Okay.
I want to let you know that Britt is going to be with us in the subscriber video chat room on August the 17th at 10 a.m. Pacific. That's 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. So get ready with your questions for Britt. She probably knows more about Billy Meyer and the Pleiadian experience than anyone in the world. Don't miss this unique opportunity to question her directly. And if you're not a subscriber, now surely is the time to go to unknowncountry.com and subscribe. We're talking to Britt Elders. Britt has republished UFO Contact from the Pleiades, excuse me, folks, volumes 1 and 2 in a marvelous new book. You can see the cover right there as we're speaking. And it is got a foreword by Shirley MacLaine, Jaime Masson, and it provides an introduction. And all of these great images of from Billy are here. And like I'm looking at one right now. One of the big things was always, They're near trees.
Yeah.
Therefore, they must be models that are held up in some way. But the images where they're free in the air, not near trees, and there are plenty of those. Did you ever find any sign of any strings or anything? Because I'm quite sure you looked.
No, all of the images that we had digitized, that was the first thing you look for. Because when you digitize a photograph, you will see anything unusual in it, including a string supporting it. They all came out very, very clean. When you have it digitized and you're comparing it to the size of another object, a known object, you can determine the size. You triangulate it to get size when you have the size of a known object. They were 21 feet in diameter. It would have taken a very big string to support it. Now, I will say this. We, as investigators, contacted Wally Gentleman. He was a special effects expert. He worked with Kubrick. He worked with Coppola and many, many others. We had him make a model for us, and we hung it from a string so we could take photographs of that model and compare it to the photographs that Billy took. We found the string in our images, but we never found a string in Meyer's images. One of the best pictures I think he took was taken on April 6th in 1976, I think it was. And it shows a Mirage jet fighter in the same scene as this UFO. The interesting thing was there was sound taken during that same sequence that Billy had a tape recorder going. And when that sound was analyzed, you could hear the Mirage fighter. You could hear a police siren in the background and a dog barking. So that just, it adds to the validity of Meyer's claims.
Well, the fact that there were so many photographs also, and yet he was very cagey about, he didn't let anyone near him. Why was that?
The Pleiadians told him that they would break off the contact if he tried to bring anyone with him. So that was something that, you know, they just did not allow for whatever reason. But they
did. I know the reason.
Go ahead.
This has to be kept in question until a certain time.
Yeah.
And all of it has to be kept in question. We are here to do what you're doing, which is to pick it apart, analyze it, try to understand it on our own. This is about a new world if we can take it. It's not about a new world being given to us. And that's why that is the whatever reason, and it is true across the board. That is why there are so few, for example, images, real images of the Greys. I've seen the Greys quite a few times, and therefore I'll know immediately whether or not an image is real. Mm-hmm. And there's very few of them. Yeah. And okay, so but anyway, let's go on. Tell us about you did some analysis. Did you do some analysis of the metal?
Yes.
What was the outcome?
The metal was very interesting. It was analyzed at IBM Laboratories with Dr. Marcel Vogel. He put it under a spectrum microscope and took it apart. What he found were two very interesting things. The metal was metal and then a crystalline structure and more metal. So pieces of metal were separated by crystal. That in itself was very unusual because at that time we only poured metal. We heated it and we poured
it.
Yes. And now we have the ability, after all these years, to do cold fusion. But that metal was done in a cold fusion process. That was number one. Number two was that the metal contained thulium, which is a rare earth element, very costly to extract, and very hard and difficult to find. How would a man with one arm, a fifth grade education, worldly, but no education as we think of it, How would he know to find thulium and incorporate it into a metal? And how could he create a cold fusion process when our scientists couldn't do it?
So I think we can safely conclude that this wasn't done by him.
That's right.
Was there ever any isotopic analysis done on it?
Not at that time. No, they didn't have all of the different things that they needed to do it.
Yes.
The metal...
Has there been any more recently?
No, there hasn't. When
it's very expensive.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I've been looking into where do I go with this now? Because I'm bringing people up to date with something that did happen 40 years ago with the equipment and the technology we had 40 years ago. But what do we have now? And so I'm looking at, okay, now where can we go with it from here? Not that to me it matters, because when you use the equipment of the day to test, then you're at the point you can go no further. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. And you obviously went as far as you could.
Yeah.
Then some of the art's parts have been tested for isotopes and found to have isotopes that can't exist in this universe. But
wow.
In other words, the isotopes had to have been either it's from a parallel universe, or the isotopes had to have been manufactured at great expense. I mean energy expense, because it'd be very energy intensive to do that.
Right.
So, and I would be fascinated to find whether or not this metal is isotopically normal, or if it's the isotopes are unusual. That's why I asked the question. Okay, now one of the other things is that there were many people in the area who had unusual experiences of various kinds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but before we go there, we're going to take our last break for the free side. We'll be right back. We're back. We're talking to Britt Elders, her website, brittelders.com. Her new book is a reissue 45th anniversary edition of UFO Contact from the Pleiades, Volume 1 and 2. It is an amazing, beautiful book full of color illustrations. And you can listen here and hear the actual solidity of this case. There's a lot to the case, and they say, why do you think, Britt, it has been so roundly, and we'll get to the other witnesses in a minute, so intensely debunked? It's almost as if there's a professional level of debunking going on. It's more than just the usual trolls sneering because their egos are out of shape. It's more. This has been really worked over. Why is that, do you think? And who's doing it?
It's very interesting, and it's a great question. I don't know who's doing it. I know that we had access to labs such as the Groton Naval Connecticut facility. We had access to JPL, Scripps Institute, Ames Research, IBM. We were in labs that the government was involved with. I think more than anything, it was an outside group that was just sort of pushing against everything that was coming out that was good, that people could learn from. Who they were, I'm not sure. I really don't know. And I do know this. The biggest problems we had, truthfully, were from the UFO groups. And they did not want us involved at all.
Because you weren't in their world.
Right.
Well, did I mention before on the show that I have had contact with one of the Pleiadians? I don't think so. I did mention it.
Just briefly. Okay.
Briefly. Okay, well, here's this. I'm not going to go into great detail about it, folks. Most of it was over the telephone. There was enough happened for me to be absolutely certain that this man was what he said he was. And I'm not going to go into the details about that, but I am going to go into one detail about the things he said. He said, and I'm quoting him now, that if you start a war with the Greys, they will never let you win, and they will never let you stop fighting.
Ugh.
And he was not friendly about them.
Uh-huh.
He was uncomfortable, let's put it that way. And I think that someone in this country did start a war with the Greys. The U.S. Air Force has. Not the Navy, but the Air Force. And fortunately, I think the Greys look upon the Air Force as fighting them, not other parts of the country, not all of us. They don't have that vision. They see it as a single, you know, in other words, if jets are coming and shooting at them, then they see the jets as the enemy.
Uh-huh.
And therefore, it's the Air Force that can't beat them and can't stop fighting.
Wow.
And that's probably one of the major reasons for the secrecy. Now, the other side of the coin is he did not like the Greys because he felt like they were too controlling, I guess would be the best word to put it.
Mm-hmm.
And that that we should be very careful. I should be personally, he was concerned about the reason I was having this contact with him is he was concerned about my relationship with the Greys.
Uh-huh.
And he was warning me about, you know, how to keep my own counsel, not believe them, and basically saying that I had to remain my own man or I would get sucked up in something I could never escape.
Wow.
So, and as I say, he was real. Now, the interesting thing about him, he had a definite connection to the United States government. So he was working through the Defense Department.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it that apparently is deep into this, and none of the whistleblowers I've heard, David Grushin, Lou Elizondo, and so on, have ever mentioned a word about this aspect of it. So I don't think they know about it. And I don't even think that it's even still going. I don't know if it's even still going on.
Uh-huh.
But it is real. And now when we go on, we're going to start talking about this whole issue of what are these conflicts and how do we relate to that? And also we're going to go into some of the things that happened to other people, which I started to do and then got sidetracked on. And I'm now supposed to end the show at 30 minutes in a desperate attempt to get people to subscribe because we're running out of steam now and I'm going to be pulling out in about a year, it looks like right now. So, if you want to keep it going, subscribe now. And thank you very much for listening, Free Dreamlanders. I hope to see you next week. And please don't put a lot of ugly things up in the comments on YouTube because we're doing it this way. We have no choice or we wouldn't be. We'll see you next week. We're talking to Britt Elders. Her new book, UFO Contact from the Pleiades, 45th anniversary edition. This is a dynamite conversation, in my opinion. Now, let's do this. Let's go to first the witnesses, and then we're going to get into this whole issue of conflicts and the Billy Myers' message, et cetera, and so forth.
Okay.
So tell us a little bit about other witnesses. And I know there were no direct witnesses to the... Well, there may have been. Tell us about it.
Well, witnesses did see Kraft, but not with Billy. Kraft were seen all over the area around where he lives in Switzerland. And it was really fascinating talking to the man at the post office or the dairy farmer down the way. They all said, yeah, we see these things. We don't know what they are. We don't want to know what they are. But he's talking to them, so go talk to him. They didn't want to talk to us too much. But many people had come in, and they came from all over the world. When the word got out that Billy was having contacts, people just showed up, and they'd show up at 3 o'clock in the morning, demanding an audience. It was really something to see, but there were dozens and dozens of witnesses that saw lights in the sky, saw the ship, saw landing tracks, had amazing experiences.
Well, so the witnesses, obviously something was going on there. Are you aware of whether or not it's still going on? Or
it is. I talk to Billy quite often. He's doing well. He's 87 years old. He's still having contacts, some face-to-face, mostly telepathic. He is not getting evidence anymore. They told him that their purpose in the beginning was to deliver the evidence, and then that was it. There wasn't a necessity to give him thousands of more photographs or more movie footage or anything else. He had what he needed to say, this is what happened to me. So he's doing well, but the witnesses keep, or the what would be witnesses, keep showing up at the farm. And they hang out, they try to learn things, they try to have a personal conversation with Billy. That's less and less frequent as he ages, understandably. And I think it's sort of something Billy is enjoying now, the fact that he can pull back from people. He doesn't feel obligated to talk to everyone. And he's enjoying that aspect while still more and more people show up at his farm.
Yeah, I can hardly imagine that, because the visitor's attitude toward me is this: you do it, fella. you signed on for it. You do it. And so I do it as much as I possibly can. And I understand. I don't think I'm going to make it to any 88. I'd be surprised if I even made it another couple of years. But I can well understand his reticence to deal with yet another person with experience, et cetera, and so forth.
Yeah.
But let's talk now a little bit about his experience and what he learned, because there is something here. There's a way of thinking and a way of living and advice and ideas. Tell us about some of this material and what you think of it and how has it affected your life.
Well, the first thing the Palladians told him was they were there to let the Earth human know that they are not the only thinking beings in the universe. And that's so important right now. To me, that's very profound, because we're talking about setting up bases on the moon and Mars and then going further into space without consideration of other individuals and their views as we do this. We have to be aware that there are other beings out there. That's number one. But then they said, too, that their forefathers are our forefathers. And that struck me so strongly, because we found histories throughout the world, oral legends, mythology, everything, even to cave paintings and petroglyphs, that show and depict stories of extraterrestrials communicating with man and being on this planet eons ago. I think that's important to really look at. That affected me very profoundly, because are we seeded by all of these ancient cultures that visited us? I think that's something people need to find in themselves, whether or not they believe that's possible, but I certainly do. The biggest thing that they said that I think was of value is we have to change our warring ways. We have to get out of the way of anger, of attacks on each other, no matter what type of attacks they are. And this is important from the standpoint of on an individual basis as well as a global basis. So you take it through all of the stages there. It's very, very valuable. When I asked Billy not too long ago, What do you do when people come out and attack? Because it's going to start again. He said, you send them love. You don't get mad. You don't retaliate. You send them love. And I thought, it's pretty profound. How do you do that when you've undergone the things he's gone through? Assassination attempts. People chasing his children, trying to kidnap them. We were there when that happened. How do you have such a balanced spirit? And he says, it's very important. He says, that's the only way you can survive. That's the only way the planet can survive. If people develop this understanding within themselves of how they grow, not just through technology, which we all are into, but also from a harmonization of the technology and the spirituality. And to him, that was really, really important.
I think that's the key to everything, because until we do that, it's strange, because a lot about that is in my new book that I'm working on right now, and you touch on it here. That's very cool, because until we do that, we can't make any progress.
That's right.
Not real progress. The kind of progress that we need to make scientifically breaks out of the box of materialism that we're now in, mm-hmm. and moves into areas that we presently can't address with the scientific method in such a way that we can address them with the scientific right. method. And that we haven't managed to do yet, but we will, I think. But this is absolutely critical, because even technologies, such as the technologies, some of the technologies, especially I think the Palladians have, are dependent upon spiritual as well as physical working together.
Absolutely.
Now, why, and this gets me to the question of why are they called beam ships?
Because, well, this is really intriguing, but they don't, first of all, to the Palladians, space and time are null and void. They do not exist.
Yes.
So you can transfer from their planet, Era, in the Pleiades, to Earth in a matter of what they say is 7 hours. And what happens is they take 3.5 hours to leave their system. Then there's this hyper jump, which is done through the beam, and then 3.5 hours to enter our system. And they go in a slow process and leave in a slow process. But the distance is traveled in a thought, literally a thought. And that is where the spirituality also comes in. You have to be balanced. You have to have this harmony within yourself to make that hyper leap, that hyper jump through space. Because if you don't, it won't be successful. And so this is something where their technology has merged with their spirituality, and it's them determining that they have to be in that harmonious place of self and spirit. It's a big deal. And when you think about what you can do when you're in that wonderful space of feeling so aligned, there's nothing that can stop you. Nothing. But it's the alignment within, with the spirit, with creation, that brings that all into being.
And the technology and the spirituality are essentially the same thing. They work together.
Yes.
Because the non-physical aspect of the being is where the technology is invented. You know, interestingly enough, I have this implant in my left ear, which has been there for many years and which I use all the time in my work. It's my go-to, thank God it's there thing, because I wanted to get it taken out and Ann wouldn't let me. Thank heavens, she said, don't get it taken out. Let's figure out what it does. And now I couldn't work without it. In any case, it was invented by a man named Constantine Radovay, who was an expert on electronic voice phenomena That is to say, electronically communicating between the living and the dead, or what we call the dead. And I have the impression that he invented it and it was developed on the other side. And it's a physical object. No question. You can go on my website and you can see the attempt to take it out. And so it's there and it's real. And there's CT scans of it.
Uh-huh.
Now, this means that the spiritual side can build technology that works in the physical world. And right. I think that's exactly what those ships are.
Right.
I think that they're like the Greys, these people. They can come and go into the physical and non-physical very easily.
Yes. And they say that. They can actually project so that Billy can see them, but no one standing around him can see them. And they do that through thought. But that could only be accomplished if your thought was pure and in balance.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have you ever had that experience?
I have. Yeah.
And so I can see it in your face.
Oh my God. It's something that it just energizes you. And it's a type of energy that's so powerful, so strong. You just feel like, okay, you know where you're going. You know what you need to do. It's laid out before you and nothing will stop you. Nothing gets in your way when you're in that harmony because it's so wonderful.
That's beautiful. Let's talk about the future and what has been communicated. Because there's a lot in Billy Meyer's material about our world and its future. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit to that? Speak to that a bit.
Sure. I think they are concerned more about the inhabitants of this planet than for the planet. The planet will survive. And that's going to be very, very important for people to recognize. But will we survive? That's the question. Can we find that harmony within that allows us to move forward and allows us to be in that balance, to learn how to reach that harmony within yourself, that connection to creation, that connection to spirit that always exists. If we can do that, then we have the possibilities of becoming a phenomenal place. But if we don't do that, we have the possibility of destroying ourselves. And that would be done through fear, through anger, through all of the things that the name calling, the finger pointing that goes on, he's right, she isn't, all of that. It's not fair. And we have to learn to listen. They're concerned about us mainly from the aspect of what we will do to each other. They are concerned about the planet. This is very important to them because we don't understand that Earth is a living being and it reacts to us. So we have to be more cognizant of how we react to understand fully how Mother Earth reacts. Does that make sense?
Makes great sense. Let me read a quote from the book. Mm-hmm. This is from one of the Pleiadian cosmonauts. By the way, their names, interestingly enough, have got a certain connection to ancient Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that, you know, that takes me to, just as an aside here, more than one of the letters, and this is referring back to something we talked about a moment ago, suggests to people who sent us the letters had been told that they were part of a family that had been around for a very long time. In other words, we have ancestry in other worlds, and this is probably why the ancient Egyptians, their whole their whole afterlife process was a matter of returning to the stars, I believe, to Orion, to return home in a sense. The Earth humans' interest in space is just beginning to awaken, but it will take a great deal to maintain the knowledge and discover the many secrets that await these pioneers. This is Tah, Pleiadian Cosmonaut in 1975. And I was told something quite similar by the man. And I have to tell you, folks, if he'd walked down the street, no one would have noticed. He was not 6 feet tall. He was a normal, I mean, not 7 feet tall. He was a normal looking man, very light complected. That's the difference, only difference. And so here, this great deal to maintain the knowledge. We're going into a very disturbed time in our world. The climate is collapsing around our ears. I think that we're soon going to have, in the United States, a government that doesn't believe it's even happening at all. And that'll just make it happen worse, because nature isn't political, nature is numbers. So we're going to have a really disruptive experience probably over the next 10 years. How do you react to that? And do you think they might help us?
Wow. Just watching what's gone on in, let's just say, the last 10, 20 years, it's disturbing. And we're on a downhill spiral. We're not progressing. I just want to get out there and tell everybody, you know, it's up to you as an individual. You got to find that place. And when you find that harmony in self, then you can move to someone else, share it with someone else, and then they can take it from there. I'm concerned with everything happening in the world right now, because we are not hearing each other. There's no serious communication going on. We haven't learned how to listen and then to progress where we can find some median ground. And to me, that's really unfortunate. And that concerns me as much as anything. I am big on communication. I think it is huge that we hear what is happening from both sides. Don't take it from the media. Don't take it from the government. Take it from each other, because we have to make the change. No one else is going to.
No, that's exactly, it's up to us. This is our world.
That's right.
And, you know, I do know that this is the time of year. This is going to be aired in September, I believe. And it's an election year, and everybody's talking politics, and they're always asking me, what are your political positions, or what is the political position of the Grays, or the this or that? And first, I've learned that none of them care about our politics at all. They're not even interested. At least they do care about two things. One is the danger to the environment, and that was the main thing that the one I talked to, the Palladian I talked to me about. He was mainly concerned about that. The other stuff I talked about earlier was just secondary. And two is the danger of using nuclear weapons.
Absolutely.
But here is, interestingly enough, a third danger that has come in. It's related to the first. I got this number, 240. Apparently there are 240 active nuclear power plants in the world, and climate change may disrupt our ability to maintain them, and they may melt if they melt down. It's like having a nuclear war when you're not having one. Yeah. And so that, all of that, that's their politics, our survival. That's what they care about.
Right.
Nothing else.
It's us. We are their little brothers and sisters, and that's how they look at us. And we need to take responsibility as individuals and not keep laying it off on some organization somewhere. to fix right. the problem. It's up to us.
Now, did you do you have any idea why we're like this? Because, you yeah. know, there's something happened in the distant past. Was it a war or a huge disruption of some sort? I don't know. Do you have any ideas from this material?
I don't. I really don't. I think part of it does stem from our past, that we have always looked for something greater than ourselves without realizing that each of us is a part of one another and creation. And as the Lakota say, we are all related. That's something that we tend to look at ourselves as individuals, but we want that greater power to tell us what to be. And if you're looking at it from the standpoint of creation, creation wants what's best for you, for the earth, but it doesn't play from the standpoint in wars and who's right and who's wrong. That's up to us to find that, where we don't have that judgment anymore and that fear and that anger. I don't know how we do it or exactly where it comes from, but I know it's imperative.
Let me posit a scenario. Mm-hmm. It's X number of years from now. Everyone knows that the climate has failed and that we're in a major problem. Right now, people are intentionally confusing their wishes with reality. You know, mm. They wish it wasn't true, therefore they don't believe it.
Right.
But there'll come a time when they can't deny it anymore. And will we be helped, do you think? Or is what's going on now the help we're going to get?
I'm not sure climate would be the catalyst for help, because that's communicating with Mother Nature. I think a nuclear war would be the catalyst for them to step in.
I wonder what they would do.
So much. They said we cannot yet interfere. And the reason that that quote is so profound is because the Pleiadians did not originate in the Pleiades. They originated in the star system Lyra. On that planet, they had the same divisiveness that we have here now. They destroyed themselves with a similar war that was a nuclear war. The difference was they had the ability to actually go someplace else and engineer a planet to live on. That's how they created Era. They engineered it. We don't have that capability. We don't have that knowledge yet. So that's when I think they would step in and say, knock it off. And something would happen to prevent a major, major nuclear war that would destroy not only us, but the planet too.
I've often suspected that the rarest of the rare are not only intelligent species, but intelligent species who survive.
Mm-hmm.
Because the grays won't. I was once with three of them face to face, and I could see in their faces. I said, I can see that you have a lot of history, just like we do. Nothing whatsoever was said. And I thought to myself, maybe they have actually got more history than we do. More violent history, and they don't want me to know that. Because I can't imagine that they haven't had wars. I mean, you spend 2 seconds with them, and you know you're in the presence of someone who's definitely very, very intense and violent, potentially. Mm-hmm. What about the Palladians? Do you have the... I don't have the impression they're that way at all. I think they're much less violent and less intense than the Greys.
Very much less violent. They are anti-violent, period. They do not believe they need it to exist. They don't need that surge of anger and adrenaline that's created from creating a war. They say that it's much better, again, to listen, to hear, to communicate, and then to move forward with that knowledge. But the key is knowledge. You've got to have that inner knowledge. It's something you can gather by reading, by learning, by watching documentaries, by whatever it takes. But you know it in yourself, in your being. It's in the core of you. And that's where they want us to go. That's what they want us to really learn to touch. Because all of these wonderful experiences that people have all contribute to that knowledge of self. And if we don't change self, then we're in trouble.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's what we have to do. And we're at the change of the age in the precession of the equinox, mm-hmm. and in the Western long calendar, the zodiac. Right. And do you think this change of age might help us? Because we're moving into a period of a new... Tell us about that.
I think it is. I think it's helping us now, the sort of precursor to it. People are becoming much more curious. They want to know. They want information. They don't know how always to find it, but they want it. And they don't want to sit down in front of the internet and, you know, go through and read this and that and not knowing if it's real or isn't real. You never know if it's real or isn't real until you've had the experience, until something happens that resonates within you. And when it does, man, the world opens. It's great, because then your curiosity is sparked and you want to go play and learn and experience more and more and more. That's what's important right now. What you're doing with your library, what others are doing, compiling the information, it's so valuable. It's just imperative that we get this information out there.
Yes, because the whole progress of everything depends on the people doing the whole contact thing right. And it's interesting that the Grays, at least, are not concerned about most Asian societies, because they and Native American societies and Indigenous societies all over the world, because they say they're already there. They've got this.
They do.
It's the Western societies that have lost. And one of them once said to Betty Andreasen, "Children of the Northern people, you wander in eternal darkness." Ah. And I think that's exactly where we are. Only, you know, you wander and wander in eternal darkness until you realize you're in the dark, and then you go into the light because you knew you understood that.
Right.
But is it going to take a complete upheaval? Because Aquarius is looming, and the water carrier pours out the water of Pisces in Aquarius. The little fish of mankind is swimming in that water. That is to say, we are given everything we need by planet Earth, and we're used to her giving us everything we need. That's going to stop. That is to say, the waters of womb of Earth, our waters are going to break. And here we're going to be flapping around on the dry shoreland, a little fish out of water. Will they help us, do you think? Or is it this kind of thing, this kind of interview, this kind of talk with someone like you, who is an evangelist in a way for this? Is that a significant part of the help we're getting?
I think it's a significant part. I think the work a lot of us are doing in just trying to bring the information forth so people can make their own decisions is really important. I think that somehow, maybe even subliminally, they're influencing the consciousness of many that are receptive and open to it to help preserve Mother Earth, to help feel that connection to nature. That is our source. The American Indians are absolutely right. You have Mother Earth. She nourishes. She gives you everything you need. You have Father Sky. That's spirit. You combine the two and you have this human enjoying both worlds. We have to get to the point of enjoying both worlds.
Because we've been circling around and it always comes back to us. When I go on X, which used to be Twitter, why did he change the name? It's so ominous calling it X. I see everybody is fixated on the government. And we touched on this a little bit earlier. I think that someone outside the government is in control of what the government can and can't do. I know the administration must be, because 14 administrations have all kept this secret. Come on. That's not, and recently, for example, the Obama administration, John Podesta's biggest regret, as he said when leaving office, was that they had not released the UFO material.
Right.
I know at the end of the George Bush administration, the W administration, there was a meeting in Washington of people from all over the defense industry, and everyone started out thinking we should definitely release this information and came back saying, no, we shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
And of course, their reasons were not very good. We discussed that earlier in the show. But
the truth behind that is if it was released, they would lose control.
Yeah.
And that's just all that is. But it is. I mean, we can lay it at the feet of the government. We can lay it at the feet of the church. We can lay it at the feet of everything that they need to catch up. But it doesn't matter what they do. It really doesn't. It matters what we do. It is.
Exactly.
It's not a selfish issue either. It is an individual issue of knowledge, spirit, technology, how it all merges, how it can all work together. We live in a three-dimensional world. We have to have the experiences that world provides. But we forgot that we're also something bigger than something you can thump on. We are a spirit. We are connected to creation. We are connected to Earth. We're connected to it all. And we misplace that connection easily. And we shouldn't do that. We need to redevelop it in ourselves, in our own beings.
Do you think something happened to us? We touched on this a little while ago in the past that made us forget who we really are.
Yeah.
Some kind of catastrophe. What do you think might have happened?
I don't know. I am not certain if it's, I know all of the religious aspects are something people want to look at and say, oh, this is definitely the only thing to blame. But I think it goes back further, and I think it's much bigger. And what it is, I'm not sure. But we misplaced ourselves. We got to go figure out who we are now.
You know, there was a UFO contact at Varginha in Brazil.
Yeah.
And one of the aliens ended up in a surgery in a hospital, but with a broken leg.
Mm-hmm.
And he healed himself. And as he did that, the doctors around all got the same telepathic message that they felt very sorry for mankind because we had lost our ability to do this. And, you know, when you think about what have we lost and where is it? Is there anything from Billy that would discuss that? I have not read it. I know. I have to tell you.
What we have lost, he doesn't get into specifically. But he does get into how we can rediscover self. And that is through meditation, through communication, through when someone does harm, you respond with love. And love is a term that is so abused
yes.
in so many ways because we've just attached this word to anything and everything, whether it's ice cream or a romance. It doesn't matter. Yeah, love it. And that's wrong. And the love that I'm talking about is one that generates from the heart. And it's not a relationship. It's not anything like that from a physical level. It's a relationship with everything that is. And
you know, in a sense, we've lost touch with our own hearts.
Yes. Definitely. I really think so. We haven't learned how to communicate with our own heart, much less each other. Yeah,
absolutely not. Now, Brent, we have come to the end of our time together. And
oh,
I would like,
this has been so wonderful.
It's been a lot of fun. And we're really simpatico in many ways. And I want you to give Shirley my love. I know you're so very close to Shirley MacLean. And as I said earlier, I fondly remember the times we used to spend at Jeffrey's restaurant, me and Shirley and Anne, and I would listen to Anne and Shirley talk about the nature of reality and the good and the bad, the dark and the light. It was such great times. And Britt, you were always part of that, and you have done a marvelous thing in your life by making sure that Billy Mayer's case got the hearing it deserves in a world which does not want, if it's not my ego and I'm not getting the UFO pictures, then I'm going to say it's all fake.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I didn't get these pictures, but I'm pretty sure they're not fake.
Yeah. Well, and, thank you, Whitley. That means a lot.
And I think that Billy's message is important.
Yes.
And worth listening to. And so is yours. And so is Lee's. Thank you for being with us on Dreamland.
Oh, thank you. It was just the best show ever. I appreciate it.
Great.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Our theme music is The O of Pleasure by Ray Lynch. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Strieber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Strieber is your Dreamland host. And I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander.